Hello and welcome to Inside the Artist Shanty. Welcome to the program that interviews artists of all mediums and standings. From writers to actors, painters to musicians, we explore their craft, passion, struggles, successes, and what keeps them going and doing what they love. My name is Colin Frizzell and I'll be your host this week, Inside the Artist Shanty. Welcome to another episode of Inside the Artist Shanty. Today we're here with Scott Bradshaw, better known as Scott B. Sympathy. Here's something that I picked up off of music.com, allmusic.com. It says, Scott is a profoundly observational singer-songwriter whose mixture of country, folk, and rock influences made him a cult figure in Canada and especially in Southern Ontario. End quote. When I came out to see Scott a couple weeks ago at Graffiti in Toronto's Kensington Market, I was talking to someone at the bar who described herself as a purist, and she said that's why she likes Scott's music so much, that it's pure. So here I am with Scott in his rehearsal space down just around the corner from Kensington Market on Richmond Street. Scott, welcome to the shanty.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. So for people who aren't familiar with you, we're going to start out with the song and we'll go from there.
It all starts with the song, that's what they say. This is called Stand Up. Black and white, but it don't seem right. Even at 3:15, should I turn it off? Turn the volume down. The sun's in my eyes, I can't really see. It's a standoff. Are you waiting for me? Pretty pictures, you wouldn't recognize me. I've been living off theft, I got 2 bullets left, and it's scaring the hell out of me. Should I put my guns down and get out of this town? Sun's in my eyes, I can't really see. It's a standoff. It's a standoff, like the old west, on a broken down color TV. It's in black and white, but it don't seem right. Even at 3:15, should I turn it off? Turn the volume down. The sun's in my eyes, I can't really see. Off. Are you waiting for me? It's a standoff. Are you waiting for me? Hey, 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 hey.
Thank Thank you very much. Now, did you want to say anything about the song?
That's a song.
Is it an older?
It's a few years old now, probably at least 10, probably longer. I don't write a million songs, but I tend to write songs that stay in the repertoire for years and years. So I would say, yeah, this is about 10 years old, this song. And, you know, it's watching TV alone at night, things, you're falling asleep and the screen is there, and then you start thinking about your life and putting that into the song as well.
Just as the person said, observational.
Yeah,
observational,
yeah.
Songwriter.
That's sort of what I do.
Yeah. And you've been doing it for a long time.
Apparently.
We're both of vintage. Your first album was Neil Young Street, 1990?
1990 was my first release, but I was playing live for a long time before that.
So when did you start playing?
Well, I started playing music in my early to mid-20s when I first moved to Toronto back in the 80s. In the early 80s, and I was in a band called Groovy Religion. I played bass, but I'd always played acoustic guitar and always played Willie P. Bennett songs and Neil Young songs and the like, and started playing acoustic music. So I did both. I did the rock and I did the acoustic, and the acoustic just sort of has stuck around a little longer.
Yeah, you just enjoyed it more?
Mm-hmm, I think so. It's just something I can do on your own, whereas with the bass or electric guitar, you have to have more musicians involved. And
now, your first two albums, Neil Young Street and Drinking with the Poets, both critically acclaimed, they were both solo.
Well, there were a band involved with both of them.
With
those
them,
records.
But I mean, that was Scott B. Sympathy.
That was me writing, yes.
Yeah.
Writing the songs.
And then Long Way Down.
And
with
Long Way Down, I called the band The Sympathy because I had the same band for about a 5-year period where we wrote together and toured together and did it all. So that's more of a band record. But
and then
Unfinished Sympathy. That was after those guys, after that run, and I started doing a little acoustic record, but it turned into a more of, you know, a band related record as well.
Yeah, there's quite a few involved.
There's a lot
in,
of guests on
there.
There's Basil Donovan plays bass from Blue Rodeo, and Ashley McIsaac plays some violin, and there's quite a few guests on that.
Oh, Susanna was on it,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, she was doing background,
yeah,
vocals. The first time she had done background vocals, apparently, but she did a good job.
And that one was with True North.
The one before.
The
Long Way Down.
The Long Way
the
Down,
record,
sorry.
Was on True North, yes.
That's the one I own, actually. So do you prefer doing solo? Do you prefer the band, or is it just...
I prefer to play with a band because I feel like that right now because I've mostly been playing duets and solo for the last year or so. And but with the band, you get the interplay, and it's a little more musical.
Yeah.
And a little less nerve-wracking than to have everything relying on how you hit the guitar and how the voice comes out and if you remember the words or not.
You've been with a couple bands since then. Haven't you?
I was in another band called Strato Chief.
And what's Massey Harris?
And that was, you know, that was a band, my last thing before what I'm doing now, which is pretty well solo, and we recorded an album and then broke up, which happens sometimes.
Yes.
But that was, you know, mostly my material with backing with a regular band.
Do you have a favorite album?
That I've done?
That you've done?
I'd have to say maybe The Unfinished Sympathy is most realized for me because I had a real producer then, David Baxter, and I had great players on it. And so, yes, that's probably the one.
Well, since you sort of brought it up with, do you have a favorite album? Or one that you'd think of more influential on you?
Oh, of other artists.
Of other artists.
Oh,
yeah.
Geez, I just have such,
I know,
such a love
got,
for music.
Yeah. Well, with Neil Young Street being the name of your first, I wondered if...
Well, Neil was a big influence, but I think, yeah, Willie P. Bennett, who was a songwriter from Toronto that I kind of grew up listening to. I caught him when I was about 19 or 20 down in London, Ontario. And he ended up being a major influence on my writing and my performing.
Now, with Toronto musicians and Toronto artists over the years, do you find, like with they're talking about the venue. Not as many venues now. How do you find...
There's way more musicians.
And way fewer venues.
The venues are bottoming out, it seems.
So there are more musicians.
Oh, I think there's a lot more people doing it now.
Yeah?
I think so. I think when I came up, we thought it was tough, but... You know, we were able to get on CBC radio and television, and there was just a lot more opportunities. And VideoFact and such would give you money to make videos. And there was a national video channel back then during the whole 80s and early 90s, Much Music. And you could make a lot of leeway that way. I think it's tougher now, and I think there's more people doing it.
And fewer. Now, what about with the internet?
Well,
is it just too much?
That's something that came along way after I started, so.
Well, and it's just too much. Like, with Much Music, everybody in the country is pretty much watching, of a certain age, was watching Much Music.
That's right.
Where the internet, you kind of have to seek it out.
You can search, and you can find whatever you're looking for, if you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, where the other brought it to you more.
Yeah.
So resources-wise, you don't...
Well, it's not my age, so I've had a little trouble with making sense of the whole how to be an artist on the internet. And I haven't put that much time or effort into it because it's sort of not the way I saw it growing up, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, being a musician, I'll be 60 this year. And, yeah, I never dove right into that internet. And it's interesting because now it's like there's lots of stuff about me up on the internet and different posts, and you can find things, but it's not anything I really did myself.
No, and it's relatively new. Like, I remember I actually put a song of yours on the internet a few years ago because I couldn't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I've got the CD. I'll just load it up on YouTube. And I got a great reaction to it. And people were like, oh, we've been looking for this. But then before this, I went on and I found quite a bit with live acts, people recording you with Massey Harris. And you actually, I think you did a song off, I think you did Aquamarine Blue.
Yeah, I think it's not the internet as much as the phone being a recording and,
that's true. Everybody's,
photographic device.
That's true.
Any place you play now, by the time you get home anyways... On Facebook, there'll be a picture of the gig and maybe some live sound.
Nice.
So that's a different thing.
And if people want to see you play, you're playing at Graffiti.
Graffiti's. With the S?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm playing there a couple of times a month on the first Wednesday and about the third Wednesday. And just to keep in the game kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I hope to put another band together in the next little while because I do miss playing with the group.
Nice. It's nice to have one of the things that we're asking everyone on this is not just, it's not, I'm sure you've been asked many times about what inspires the songs as I did earlier in this, but what keeps you inspired?
Just because at this point it's what I do, and I've realized lately I sort of got ran out of the city of Toronto here because it's just got so much more expensive to live here than it ever has been for me before, and I didn't realize it for a while. And so a friend of mine out in Brantford, where I'm from, said, why don't you come and live in my house, and it'll be cheaper and you can not run out of money all the time. So I've tried it, but it's worked. It's done a number on my music in a way, because I'm used to being here and I'm used to my musical community being here, and now that I'm out there I feel a little stranded and isolated. So the only thing that's kind of keeping me going now is the guitar and the songs.
And coming in.
And I've realized that's what I identify myself with as well as what everybody else sees me as.
Yeah, well, I lived out in the country for a while, and then when I came into the city, you needed that, the creative rush.
Mm-hmm.
And you worked at Roy Thompson Hall for how many years?
Oh, at least 10 years.
And that was... How was that for...
Well, that was amazing because that really developed my ears, because I was able to hear, you know, high-level classical music and different types of music all the time. And so I've sort of, like, my ears now are a little more developed than my technique or my playing skills. I noticed that. So I can get a little frustrated at trying to write and trying to play what I want to now.
You're getting paid to train.
Because I listen to so much great music But it's always good. That's a good way to learn music, is just listen to as much as you can by the best and surround yourself with better players than yourself. I've always tried to do that.
And with the, because everybody in the arts, you have to, you know, you're getting a job to keep you going.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you can get a job like at Roy Thomson Hall, where it's not what you want to do, but it definitely, as you were saying, adds...
It's music related.
Yeah.
So that helps.
Yes.
And, you know, you can learn a lot by just sort of watching how things happen in backstage and watching pros come in and how they do it. And it's a good thing for musicians to do, I think.
Well, and I don't know...
Get a music related job.
Yeah. In anything, like record store, whatever, as close
That's
as you
right.
can get.
That's right.
To it, so that you're constantly studying. Yeah. And even back when we were at Roy Thomson Hall, there was a good arts community.
There was
I don't know if it's still the same as that.
Well, I'm sure there's a new arts community of younger folks now, but yeah, there was, and people would come out and support each other's shows or plays or whatever people were doing.
And that's the other important thing, is to get into, like with the band, is to get into that, find that community.
The community is your best friend, and you know, I didn't realize quite as much until I moved away.
Yeah,
how much of an effect that has had on me, and to do with my whole identity, has been the scene here. And you know, I toured in that too, but I didn't live on the road. You know, I lived here.
It's almost frightening when you realize how much you're influenced by everything around you.
Yeah, because I kind of get in a new place, and then I'm just like, I start changing my spots with that place, and I start mirroring the attitude of other people around there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, if I was going to give advice to a young musician, get around good people.
Yeah.
And don't take them for granted.
And it's hard to realize that, especially I think when you're in it.
When you're in the middle of it,
you
always
see
are striving
for the trees.
You're striving for more, yeah.
Yeah, not to use a worn out cliche, but it kind of worked at that
sure
particular
enough, I
moment.
I use them all the time in the song.
Yeah,
so that's okay.
Yeah. So are you working on new material?
Yeah, I'm always working on new material. It doesn't come very quickly, because you have to decide when you to end the thing and to stop working on it. And that's the trouble with a lot of artists, I think. It's just hard to when to stop mixing the thing, when to stop trying to write that second verse.
That's actually the co-host, Tim Drodge. That's a question he often asks, is how do you know when it's done?
I a lot of times I just make a call and I'm just like, it's not quite done. And I just get out there and start playing it live, and things sort of take care of themselves, the loose ends, and you realize where the weak spots are, or if it's finished or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the joys of playing it live before recording is that you get to test it. And
That's right.
You know, it's writing it in sand, so you can go back and...
And before the internet, you could do that all in private, just, you know, a bit of an audience there
or
whatever, but it wasn't... You know, people fall off the stage now and they're on TV the next day.
Yeah.
They just fell off the stage.
So I think it can be interesting for fans to hear a song develop.
You know, I always enjoyed that kind of thing.
Oh, I think of the Tragically Hip when they did the Highway Girl, when Gordy did that poem in the middle about the dotted map, and then that line ended up in Locked in the Trunk of a Car years later.
Because that's what he just started doing it on stage one
night. And then there was Nautical Disaster too. It started out as a killer whale tank and then ended up, I think
that's why it's good to actually play songs for a while before you record them. Not too long.
No.
That you're too confident with them, but for a while.
Now, what do you mean that you're too confident with them?
Well, sometimes you go in the studio and the songs that you think you have down the most because you've been playing for so long are just a little tired and you don't realize. And the ones that you're just working on, you're still striving, so you're taking more chances just trying to get through the thing. But that can unleash good activity.
Yeah.
And make it something stronger or something new anyways.
So it's just, again, figuring out when... when it's done.
Yeah, it's just a bit of a trick on both accounts, with new songs and with old songs.
So with the scene, didn't really decide if it's not really, is it, was it, would you say it was better back then all around, or just different? Just more resources for everybody back then? Or
exactly.
Yeah, just more resources.
I think there was more resources because there was less of us doing it. I think now there's a million bands and there's a million little scenes. There's not one, like, there's not a scene that has that much effect on a lot of bands at once. There'll be little cliques of opportunity in this town now, and that's a little different.
Now, is that more genre? Like, you'll have your, you know, your country folk clique, your ska, your all the different things?
Not necessarily. Sometimes that's just a social thing, and the people in that scene, that the movers and shakers and what they're playing and
and
how they're influencing people. There's been bands in this space here for many years. Actually, the Tragically Hip, when they first came to Toronto, they used to practice down here. And so there's that vibe.
Yeah.
And then I've got a lot of bands over, I've been down here for over 20 years, 25 years or so. And I've got some good bands now. A band called Beams, they're a 7-piece, just miraculous band. I don't know why they're not famous, but you can kind of go out there with all your bells and whistles, and some things don't stick these days. And there's never really been any sense to it, but that's sort of what's happening.
But well, that's the whole thing. You never, you know, there's no way of saying that who's going to hit and who's going to not. And sometimes it's surprising who comes out, and it's heartbreaking who doesn't.
It's always heartbreaking who doesn't. And some of the people, it's questionable. You'll think, well, how did they break through and have a hit? But it's just the nature of the business. It's always been that way, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With things like CanCon and such, do you think they're as relevant as they once were? Or?
Well, there's Canadian musicians all over the world now, so I don't know. I'm not sure. But I'm glad they had CanCons. We were able to hear a lot of and have a lot of great Canadian music, maybe a lot of music that we wouldn't have heard because it was put on our radio and came into our living rooms. And without those CanCon rules, maybe we wouldn't have as much of a star system that we have now.
Yeah, and we did, like, some of the Canadian acts that really got boosted of that are the legendary ones. And it's just...
And you didn't see it. It came out of nowhere in a way. I mean, I remember doing this radio show called Ear to the Ground. It was Murray McLaughlin was the host on CBC. Another national show, a guy like me could be on. And the other guest that day was, she was just coming up, was Sarah McLaughlin. And she was good, but I didn't really see that she was going to become this worldwide star. So, I mean, a lot of this, you can't take that stuff for lightly, that it was on the radio and that there was Canadian content rules.
Yeah, and it got a lot of exposure.
You know, Bryan Adams didn't need those rules. He was already kind of world famous, but the rest of us did.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that Bryan Adams had said that he actually broke in the States before Canadian radio started playing.
Sure, that's why he wasn't worried about it.
Yeah. But, it was great for you to make the time for me today.
Hey.
It was wonderful, and... You said what you would, you know, the advice to, any other advice to struggling artists of any?
Just get lost in the music. And, I mean, there's so much I wish I would have known about the business now as a young musician. But I don't know if I would have been any better knowing that. I don't know if I would have made any different choices. I always just followed the songs. I always had people that helped manage me and direct me and such like that. And I always found I was kind of lost without them. So I guess a good advice would be to learn a lot of that stuff yourself, but some artists aren't good at it. I mean, I could get the good reviews, I could do good shows, I could entertain people, and I could write songs, but I was never a businessman, and I definitely didn't get into the music because I wanted to be a businessman.
Well, and that's the challenge, too, is the whole, it's not just how talented you are or how much work you put in if it doesn't get heard.
No, it's the music business. It is called the music business. And a lot of us are really surprised when we find out how much of a business that it is.
Yes. Yeah, that it's not. Now, you did, I know we're wrapping it up, but I just wanted to, because you recorded both on your own label.
Yeah.
And then on somebody else's.
Yeah.
How did you find that?
Well, I thought it was sort of interesting because you get on a bigger label and you think that people are going to get your music out there more. But actually, if you're working your own label and you have the right connections, you can actually do better with sales and with making people aware of your music by doing that, like with your own music.
By just because you're in control of everything.
Yeah, I think so. Because there's nobody else doing it.
And it depends on if the label decides that you're going to be the one they promote.
Yeah, sometimes you get signed to a label and you think they're going to really work the record and do all this stuff, and then it doesn't hit the wall and you're left standing there, and you're not supposed to be doing that stuff then. So all you can do is go, well, I guess we'll wait till the next record.
Well, again, thank you very much for your time. And I guess the main lesson here is normally, just do what you love and keep going. And
that's what I got to say about it. Yeah, just, you know, I've just always been devoted to it. And I find a lot of people out there seem to have that going on. So keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Since it all started with a song, we're going to end it with a song. Only this one is recording off Scott's third album, Long Way Down. The track is entitled Actual Love. Enjoy.
Salt and vinegar, garlic and lime. Out in the kitchen, approaching midnight. Books about medicine, conquering fear. I get nostalgic this time of year.
Enjoyed the show and were inspired to find your passion and pursue it, or keep going if you already have. It can be a lonely road, but we'll travel it together.